From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. Where are we going right now?
We're going into a loading dock. It's a electronics disposal area.
How often do you come here, Max?
Oh, I come here like every day. It's like on the way home from work, so just stop by and see the stuff, see what I can salvage, really.
How many pounds? If you had to guess, how many pounds are here right now? How many pounds of old electronics?
Say 3 tons, so like 6,000 pounds. 2 tons, 3 tons, yeah. Maybe 2 tons. 2 tons sounds great.
Yeah, what is this stuff?
This would be, looks like a server. Yeah, these are drive bays for a server. All the cards are gone, all the RAM's gone.
Processing.
CPU's probably also gone.
You just have the heat sink.
Yeah, someone is scrapping this for gold. A lot of people come here for gold, but I'm here for the lab equipment.
What's the best thing you ever found here?
I found a, what's it called? A thermocycler, PCR thermocycler here once. Works totally fine. Again, I'm not a bio guy, so luckily I have a friend who is a bio person, and she's down to clown with that. Most expensive thing is that ion pump.
What's the worst thing you've ever found here?
The worst thing. So they have these boxes of old fluorescent light tubes, and I once found one of them half filled from the bottom, which means they were all broken in the top, so it's just like a giant cloud of mercury gas coming out of that. But I don't know how that happened, but
you ever gotten cut?
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah. But it's like whatever. Yeah, this is healing. I got that the other day. Came here in shorts, which was a mistake.
There's a blueberry iMac under there.
How is there?
I mean, is it free energy? Like, it's close, right?
Basically free, yeah. It's like seawater is about 1 or 2% this fuel. Yeah, it's basically free. Some water is also now nuclear fuel, and we have so much water.
What is possible in the post-fusion world that is not possible now?
The way I see it is, if you ever look up a chart of what happens to an animal population when it receives some bounty, some boon, like you can see population of rabbits, or there's this great image of the a population of, I think it was like deer on some island in Canada when they just dumped a ton of food there, the population explodes, and then they're out of food and it plummets. And my fear is that's what's happening with humans and oil and fossil fuels, where we found this boon and it has made our population explode. Like, unprecedentedly so. And unless we find a way to sustain at some level, it's going to crash when we run out. Because we will run out, because it's not a replaceable thing, it's a finite thing. So we're going to run out. Whether it's sooner or later, it's going to happen if we keep using it. So we have to use the time that we have in this golden age to figure out a way to sustain it. Otherwise, if we just use it up, we're just gonna die. Oh, shit! Now, what in the world? Let's see if it works.
Keep doing that on again.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
You know you're right when what you found is beautiful.
The podcast about...
The unknown.
How you doing?
Doing well, yourself?
Doing good. Just one second here.
Yeah, no problem. Beautiful day out here.
That's finally cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Max.
Hey.
What is fusion?
It's when you take two atoms and smash them together, get them to become one atom.
I mean, you make it sound so easy.
Oh yeah, like conceptually it's not that hard to think about, but in practice it's a little bit different. It's not really like anything we interact with on a daily basis.
Okay, here's my analogy for fusion. Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Sure.
So it's like you have two elephants that hate each other, and the closer they get to each other, the faster they want to run apart from each other. And your job is like you and your friend are trying to push them backwards so that they touch.
Yeah, except once they get really close, then they realize they love each other.
How close? Wait, how close?
10 to the minus 15 meters.
Right, but like, how small is that?
So, the human mind kind of breaks down past a couple thousand in terms of scale. Like, if you can imagine $10, you can imagine $1,000 probably pretty easily. Can you imagine $1,000,000? How sure are you of a million? Well, that's 10 to the 6. A billion? That's 10 to the 9. Now, a trillion is 10 to the 12, and we're talking three more orders of magnitude past that, but small instead of big.
So, like, kind of like that?
yeah.
Pretty close. Wait, but why is it hard to do here on Earth?
Fusion, it just doesn't happen naturally. I mean, it happens naturally in that it happens in stars. Fusion is what the sun's doing constantly. It's how it gives off energy. Getting the particles in the right position, in the right state to do that, and then pushing on them hard enough is really hard.
All right, you think we should go look at your fusion reactor?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't know what I was expecting.
I mean, it's a giant hunk of steel with a bunch of dangerous electrical hookups.
But yeah? it looks like one of those diving things that you would put on your head.
Oh yeah. Like a diving bell helmet.
It's like a scuba helmet you would wear if you had like a bunch of different eyes. But there's only is it just these two little windows?
Yeah, those are the only windows on it right now.
Huh.
You can actually see into it.
Are you allowed to tell me what that shape is?
That is a truncated icosahedron.
One more time.
Truncated icosahedron. Yeah, it's an Archimedean solid made of hexagons and pentagons.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Let's find somewhere to sit down and chat about some stuff. Before we had that little moment of silence, I asked you if you could think of a short story about a time when you figured out a little bit about who you were.
Back in undergrad, I was just in a physics class, and they're talking about the properties of an electron, and they mentioned the electron's mass, and I was sort of physically taken aback by a really profound quote that I had heard earlier from, I think it was Feynman, saying that the best description of an electron is a negative twist of nothing. And I was struck by this realization that, well, so it has no volume, so it can't have a mass, because a mass predicates a volume. And I won't get into it, because it's a long explanation as to why it doesn't have a mass, but it has something that seems like it. Anyway, the important part of this story is that ever since then, I've been constantly prying into what are convenient lies that we tell ourselves, what are convenient lies that we use all the time, and figuring out the truth under them. I think it was Socrates originally, or maybe it was Plato, although it's typically attributed to Donald Rumsfeld. There are the known knowns, the unknown unknowns, the known unknowns, and the unknown knowns. There are these sort of four things. The known knowns are, you know what you know. The unknown knowns are, well, sometimes you did know something, but it had to be teased out of you. You didn't actually realize that you knew something. The unknown unknowns are just a different world, but then there are the known unknowns, which are things you know you have no idea about, and those just increase. Those only seem to get bigger.
What have you found? What is it that you understand about the way atoms work that other people have missed?
I don't think I know anything special about atoms. It's all in the textbooks. In terms of my fusion reactor, that's just I figured out a way to get around a confounding theorem called Earnshaw's theorem that had sort of stopped a lot of attempts in the field.
What's that pump doing right now?
Oh, just pulling vacuum in here.
Oh, okay, that's right. Okay, and so like it's like rack-mounted oscilloscopes and various other...
Mostly power supplies. There's a digital spectrum analyzer, ion pump supply, a 10 kilovolt supply, and a 5 kilovolt AC supply. Mm-hmm. Then, that's all the equipment over there.
What do you call the fusion machine?
The vacuum tank, or the tank, is typically what I call it, because it's not really a fusion reactor until I really have done a lot of fusion in it, right? But before then, it's, I guess, a prototype. Sometimes call it POC2, Proof of Concept 2. Proof of Concept 1 worked great, but that's over in the living room.
So Earnshaw's theorem, right?
Mm-hmm.
We might break our elephant analogy. In this analogy where we have these like two elephants that are like both
angry,
hate each
other,
and want to get away, and we're trying to push them into a contact point. Where we left that analogy last time, you said they get close enough and then they love each other and they want to be really close to each other.
Yeah.
Right? You're essentially trying to trap it. You're trying to hold it down with a bunch of other particles. There's a lot of things working against us getting to that point. And one of those main things, if I understand correctly, is Earnshaw's theorem.
Yeah.
So what is Earnshaw's theorem?
Earnshaw's theorem is that, imagine if you had a herd of those really angry elephants, and you put them all in a circle, and then if you had just another one of the angry elephants and you put them in the middle of the circle, there's no way that you could ever get that one in the middle to stay in the middle. It'll always find a way to get out of the other elephants. So you can't trap an angry elephant in a circle of other angry elephants. It doesn't work that way.
Like when you try to get something else inside that circle, that one that's in the middle is going to fly out of there.
Yeah, it'll always find a way out. It's not even that you can't put a second one in there. It's that the first one will find a way out. Huh. It'll always find a way out. And so they'll always, it's called an assemblage of particles. The assemblage will always break down. But if you move it, and you move it in the right way, you can get something to stay in that confined area. It's constantly unstable, but it's unstable in a stable way.
You say it's stably unstable. When I make soup sometimes, I will puree it. And then suddenly, when the stove's running, these like bubbles will pop up on it. And if you let those bubbles pop up, that it can spray liquid out and burn you. But if you keep stirring it, it will never bubble. It'll never pop.
Yeah.
Is that stably unstable?
That's basically what I'm doing, is moving something around in such a way that it never has to be stable. It's always unstable, but that's okay because of Earnshaw's theorem. And that's sort of the beginning of how the device works. It's constantly ramping and unramping, basically holding these things in a weird little pattern that is stable in and of itself, but isn't stable any other way.
So you have those two windows into the like scuba bell looking thing. And inside there is that shape, that truncated icosahedron. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, icosahedron.
Truncated icosahedron.
It's a soccer ball. That's what that shape is. That's a truncated icosahedron. Assuming it's not like one of those weird FIFA soccer balls, like the new one, like think of the classic soccer ball. It's that shape.
Well, here's what I don't get. I don't get why your shape is important.
Well, it's for a bunch of technical reasons of that won't make terribly much sense unless you are also a physicist. It's just right. It's in this weird little Goldilocks zone where you can put a lot through it and you can hold things in this pattern.
A special shape then.
Yeah. It's probably my favorite of the Archimedean solids.
Is that why you picked it as the...
Initially, yeah. It was just because it was my favorite base shape, but I guess I got lucky in that regard because it turned out to be really useful. Sort of initial intuition.
I think for people outside of the sciences, to hear a scientist talking about intuition is a little bit strange. What is this initial intuition that you talk about?
There's actually a poster I've up in my room, which is sort of says this better than I could ever say it, which is, "In beauty is eternal truth revealed," and physics is really a search for these fundamental truths in the world. And there's this concept of elegance, and you know something's right when it's elegant. Like, the equations are really, really short. The equations are pretty simple because it's elegant, because the universe is elegant. The universe is beautiful. And you know you're right when what you found is beautiful.
You think soccer is beautiful?
No.
How far off are you?
Right now, I need to take it to a workshop because I don't want to give it fuel and turn it on now because I don't want to be bathed in radiation because that would be bad. It'd make me sick and die and then irradiate my entire apartment. Not a good outcome.
Wait, before we met up, you told me this was safe.
Yeah, the process is safe.
But then you just said that you don't want to bathe your entire apartment in radiation.
I do confinement tests here. I'm not doing the fusion tests. Oh. The fusion would be that's why I need to take it to a workshop. That's the next step, is actually doing fusion, controlled fusion with it, not the accidental incident. The process still kicks out neutrons. It still kicks out X-rays. Like, that's still dangerous. Anytime you're screwing with the nucleus, it's probably not like not a thing for, not something you should do at home. I'll take it up to a safe area, put it in probably underground. I think I might actually bury it for neutron radiation protection.
You're going to take this. Yeah. How much does this weigh?
About 300 pounds.
300 pounds?
Yeah.
You're going to take this and dig a hole?
Yeah, northern Maine somewhere. In the woods.
Like, you're going to dig a hole with like a dirt bottom on it.
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, I'd have concrete and lead line it. But in reality, just mass matters. So, like, just get some long wires, get a generator to put the volt to generate the electricity to put in the voltage, get far away from it, trigger it remotely. And then once it's done, wait for shit to cool off, come back and look for neutrons in whatever neutron detector I have.
You're telling me that you can just go dig a hole in the forest and the feds won't show up? You're gonna
dig a hole. You can dig a hole almost anywhere, and the feds won't show up.
But if I saw you, okay, just like I don't know you. If I saw you carrying this,
it's not a bomb.
Just like into the woods with a shovel, I wouldn't know what you were doing.
No.
I would assume that it was an act of terrorism.
That's a good point.
Not saving the world.
Yeah. No, I get that.
You're not worried you're going to go to jail for this?
No.
Wait, what's the radius? Like, you bury this, how deep are you going?
I bury it 6 feet under, it's fine. Like, again, mass matters. And the dirt is fairly damp, so it's not just dry sand there. There's a lot of water. Water is one of the best things you can use to stop radiation. It's fantastic. So you don't have to get that far away from it. And again, it's not putting out that much radiation. The way to minimize the radiation is just use less fuel. Use it at a lower amperage, but you're still gonna kick out some radiation. So it's best to be safe with these. If it works, it'll work in a big way. Again, not a bomb. It's not gonna blow up. Zero chance it blows up. Zero. Negative chance. It'll implode, not explode. It's a vacuum. It'll implode.
Max, it's like, I believe you, but then you say things like, if it works, it will work in a big way, which I feel like I've actually heard some evil bomb maker in a movie say. When the machine is running, what do you see through those two windows?
When it's running at with air plasma and it's not totally disassociated, you see a little plasma ball in the middle. It's just this little hanging mode of light. It's really beautiful, but just hanging there, and then eventually it just sort of pulses with the variability of the input current or input voltage. But when it's running and everything's been fully disassociated, then it's invisible.
This often happens where scientists try to explain things to lay people, and lay people like me hear bits and pieces of it, and we try to construct together something. And even if this thing was capable of running right now, which it isn't, right?
No.
Even if this thing was capable of running right now, you could flip this on. You could show me, like a bit of glowing plasma, and you could say like, look, this is fusion happening before you right now. And I would be like,
cool,
you know, cool. That's fusion, I guess, you know? And I would leave and I would say like, oh, look, like Max made fusion. Like, why should I or anyone believe that you are figuring something out that is seemingly unfigureoutable?
Well, I don't see why, first off, you think it's unfigureoutable.
People have been trying for
and we're gonna
50
keep
years.
We're going to keep trying until it works.
How long have people been trying this for?
Oh, 50, 60 years. Yeah, you're right. Or actually, Jesus, like 80 years. It's been a while. And we're getting closer. And it's one of those things that's perpetually 10 years off. But that doesn't mean it's impossible. That doesn't mean it can't be done. It just means we need more time and more different and varied approaches. I'm not trying to convince anyone that I've figured out fusion. I have an idea and I'm trying to make it work. Like, that's where I am. I'm not saying I got it all figured out, man. You just invest now and you'll be in the ground. Like, I'm not, it's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to see if my idea works.
Do you think we're on the cusp right now?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm really close to being able to test this out in a controlled environment. And if it works, then it's just a matter of scale and engineering to bring it to something that could actually produce energy. But again, it's solvable problems. And so are we on the cusp of something? I hope so. I don't know yet.
Is fusion going to save the world?
Fusion will save part of the world.
My name is Jeff Entman, and I produced this episode of Here Be Monsters with help from Bethany Denton. We've got pictures of Max Turnquist and his prototype fusion reactor up over on our website, hbmpodcast.com. Also, we have a 3D model of a truncated icosahedron and links to places that can explain nuclear fusion far better than we did here. Our website, again, is hbmpodcast.com. We're also on all the social media, too. Just search for our name, Here Be Monsters, and look for our rainbow HBM logo. Music on this episode came from The Black Spot, Sarocell, and Lucky Dragons. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our editor there is Nick White. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's independent producer project. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon. Is that Carl Jung's Red Book?
Good eye, it is.
Why?
Carl Jung was primarily a psychologist, first and foremost. But one of his large theories was that stories are more fundamental to how the world works than anyone ever thought was possible. And that stories are made of these set list of things. Like, there are a set number of archetypes. There's like the great mother, there's the tyrant father, there's the wise king, there's the evil matriarch. There are all these different fundamental people, and these fundamental people, these archetypes, when they interact, a story emerges. By knowing how they interact, you can predict stories. By recognizing these symbols in people, you can predict how people act.
So which person are you?
I'm the fool. Oftentimes people draw analogies between Jung's archetypes and the tarot cards. And I like to draw a lot of those analogies, and I like the symbol of the fool. I think it's fun. The fool is a character that is on a journey and constantly learning and constantly being immersed in new things. So the fool is the person that realizes the known unknowns.
And that was one of Jung's archetypes.
I don't think it was one of his, but it plays into it well. Jung really created this landscape of how, like, he didn't list out archetypes that Neumann did after him. Tarot's, I think, a really fundamental grouping of them. Fundamental in that they're old. It's just they're really base level things that they all seem very indivisible. And when something's indivisible, it's almost certainly fundamental. Almost certainly.
You mean like elementary particles?
Yeah. It's sort of the archetypes are like the elementary particles of stories.